You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Many mental health care workers face a constant threat of patient violence. According to WorkSafe BC statistics from last year, the number of injury compensation claims were more than 10 times higher among health care workers than in the entire law enforcement sector. Lori Strom is a former mental health worker, and she's now a staff representative for the BC Government Employees Union. She joins me on the phone from Victoria. Good morning, Lori, and welcome to Red Eye.
Good morning.
When we talk about violence against mental health workers, what kind of violence are we talking about?
Well, you know, unfortunately, in the field of mental health, workers, you know, most of them enter the field because they want to care for folks who are suffering from mental illness, and you know, their focus is on patient care, client care, and so, you know, kind of verbal abuse and physical abuse is kind of become part of the job, which is a mentality that workers have become used to, and certainly the mental health industry has become used to. But we've had workers in that field who've been injured to the point of not being able to work again, becoming permanently disabled from their injuries. And so, you know, certainly there has been a push from unions and workers in terms of trying to make that work more safe and acceptable, and balancing the issue of patient care with worker safety.
My understanding is that you started before you took on a staff job with the union, that you worked in this field, and one of your co-workers suffered physical violence. Can you tell me just a little bit about that?
Well, I worked in a psych assessment unit called Willow Clinic, which was falling under the umbrella of the Ministry of Children and Families. And at that time, the psych assessment unit was really handling those clients in British Columbia who were the most violent and the most difficult behaviors to handle. It was a locked unit, and unfortunately, as Woodlands closed, the folks that ended up working there, a lot of them didn't have a background in dealing with violent behavior. They had worked on hospital units at Woodlands with bedridden patients, non-ambulatory. And so it was kind of a perfect storm where you had, you know, workers who were not trained and didn't have the skill set to deal with the level of violence of the clients were putting out. And then the clients were coming in and having their medications changed, and that, of course, resulted in even more violent behavior, and then they were mixed with other clients going through that same process. So in that environment, there was just, we had, I think I did some statistics when I worked there, about 5 physical takedowns per shift where significant violence occurred within an 8-hour period. And it was very, very high-stress environment. And in that environment, one of my coworkers was beaten until he was brain damaged. Another of my coworkers had her face slashed by a client to the point where her post-traumatic stress was so serious she couldn't return to work.
What would you say are the most important systemic issues that make the work situation unsafe for caregivers, for mental health professionals here in British Columbia?
Well, I think the biggest systemic issue is the tension that occurs between the focus of the healthcare system on client and patient care, and the tension between that and worker safety. Worker safety has always come in not even second place, I would say. And, you know, while there's a lot of lip service given to improving it, and there have been improvements over the years, that underlying principle of workers' health being sacrificed for patient care is still very much alive in the industry.
Is there adequate training program for prevention of the violence?
No, that was something that when I worked at Willow Clinic that we achieved. After WCB identified the one assault where the worker was beaten until he was brain damaged as an attempted homicide, the union pushed for the ministry to bring in a use of force training for workers so that they could defend themselves when they were being assaulted, and also with a view to keeping the clients safe, because with a lack of training when violence occurs, and workers are being asked to address that violence to keep other clients safe. Without training, it's not safe for the clients either. And within a month of the use of force training from the Justice Institute being implemented at Willow Clinic, our stats went from the highest time loss WCB stats for violence in BC. It was reduced by 83% within a month. So that's how effective proper training can be. But it's very controversial because when you're looking at a healthcare model and you implement the notion of a use of force model, it's very controversial, and people think that if you get properly trained on how to deal with violence, that somehow the workers are going to go and just start randomly beating up patients because they have a license to do so. And that is the wrong thinking that has dictated a lack of training in the field. And the other issue is, of course, the cost of training. And, you know, at Willow Clinic, the only reason we got training is because the cost of the WCB fines was higher than the cost of the training.
So would you say then that the regional health authorities are not really responsive to the concerns about safety?
Well, I can't speak for the other health authorities that I'm dealing with, the Vancouver Island Health Authority. And we had some very serious assaults in the spring of this year. There was one resident who went from a residential site and seriously assaulted one of our mental health workers, even though the staff had been advising of the escalating behavior and the patient was not meeting the criteria to even be in that facility. It's a matter of, oh, we need a bed, so we're going to put this person here, even though workers are working alone, workers are not trained to deal with the level of violence that this patient has a history of. That patient, after assaulting one of our members, went to the hospital where he assaulted another patient and a nurse and a health science professional, at which point he was then sent to the correctional facility and assaulted a correctional officer very seriously, who is also a BCGU member. So five people were assaulted within a matter of a few days, and all of this instigated by really poor decision-making on the part of the health authority in terms of this patient's placement.
Is it that they, rather than seeing this as a problem which can be jointly resolved through cooperation with the union, they see this as something that's an antagonistic, like a bargaining issue rather than a joint problem?
You know what? I spend a lot of hours in meetings with the managers involved. And, you know, I think that there are some very well-meaning managers who want to do the right thing. I think that there's financial limitations where they won't provide adequate staffing in some of the facilities to make the work safe. And then the other issue is that what I've just described as the issue around training and what training is. They call training in the mental health field nonviolent crisis intervention training. And my response to that is, what part of this is nonviolent? It's this preconceived notion that if the workers are trained, they're somehow going to be, you know, beating up on residents, which has, you know, never been the case. So that's what we're dealing with. And, you know, certainly what came out of the meetings flowing from the spring assaults was that, you know, part of the problem is the doctors who are making these decisions have little or no regard for the safety of workers. And I'm not saying all the doctors, but certainly some of them, and that's just not their focus. Their focus is on the patient. And so one of the things that came out of all of that was that there should be a team assessing staff safety when decisions are made about where residents are placed.
Are there some things immediately that could be solutions to the problem of violence aside from changing policies?
Well, staffing levels are part of it. We've got so many workers working in residential programs in South Vancouver Island who are working alone. And, you know, what I find very disturbing is even after all of these assaults in the spring in the same programs, the Vancouver Island Health Authority has decided to have a worker work between two residential mental health facilities on graveyard shift by themselves, going from one residential facility to the other in the middle of the night in a high crime area. And so we're now challenged with engaging the WorkSafe BC around that issue. So it's like, you know, for us, for the workers in the union, we feel like nothing's been learned here.
We've been discussing things on the sort of the challenges, the difficulties, the problems. You've had some successes too, and what would you say are some of the satisfactions you've had with success in dealing with this situation of violence?
Well, certainly, you know, the regulations changed in the 1990s around violence in the workplace. The WorkSafe BC regulations implemented the requirement for a risk assessment to be done for violence prevention before, if in, in workplaces where there is a history of violence with the kind of clientele you're dealing with. So that certainly, you know, forced employers to look at that issue. And actually engage in assessing the risk and putting control measures in place. So that was a big deal, and the unions really pushed for that regulation. Additionally, the success we had at Willow Clinic was, you know, a very successful model. Unfortunately, I don't see it being replicated. Currently, it's as if we had slid backwards from that point. But I will say that there's some training at the Seven Oaks facility that's quite good and seems to be successful, where they have trained teams that go around responding to violence. That certainly is a successful model. But there's a facility where there is adequate staffing. You know, it's the smaller residential facilities that we're concerned about and, you know, exist across the province. And I think, you know, part of the other concern is that the acuity level of the mental health residents that are in the community now is ever increasing. You know, as deinstitutionalized happened over the 80s and 90s, you'll see a much higher percentage of mentally disordered offenders in the correctional facilities. So, you know, they're in a different institution where they're not really getting a full range of medical services to address their mental health issues because they're jailed. You know, now I'm seeing some pushback to create, here in Vancouver, in Victoria, they're creating a new unit at Seven Oaks to try and bring some of those mentally disordered offenders back out of jail and into a residential setting where they can have a better quality of life. But while they're doing that, they're not necessarily properly assessing the risk of violence. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I've been working on in particular to make sure that it's in place.
Well, thank you very much, Lori.
Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
I've been speaking with Lori Strom. She's a former mental health worker and a staff representative for the BC Government Employees Union in Victoria.